Oyez, oyez, oyez. The Honorable Supreme Court of Texas. All persons having business before the Honorable Supreme Court of Texas are admonished to draw near and give their attention, for the court is now set. God save the state of Texas and this honorable court.
Thank you. Be seated. This morning, the court has three causes on its oral submission docket. In the order of their presentation, they are Southwestern Pipeline Company, Incorporated, and others, versus Francis DeHasha and others from Horton County. Susan Lettner Phillips versus David Edward Beaver from Fort Bend County. And Golden Eagle Archery versus Ronald Jackson from Jefferson County. In each of these matters, the court has allotted 20 minutes for each side to present argument. The petitioner may reserve a portion of that time for rebuttal by advising the marshal of the court. We will take a brief recess in between the presentation of each argument. The arguments are being recorded by our clerk, and you may purchase an audio tape of an argument for a nominal amount by making application with the clerk. We are ready to hear argument from petitioners in Southeastern versus DeHasha.
May it please the court, Mr. William Pinnell will present argument for the petitioner. Petitioner has reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal.
May it please the court, I'm William Pinnell from Houston, I represent Southeastern Pipeline Company, which is the petitioner in this case. Southeastern was supporting investors. We were the defendants in the court below. The question in this case is, can you breach a contract by following it? The Court of Appeals said, yes, you can, surprisingly enough. The Court of Appeals said that Southeastern, as the lessee in an oil and gas lease, owed a duty to its royalty owners to cooperate with them by offering to amend the lease to make the units that the royalty owners thought we should have formed book valid. Instead of void.
How is that different from the duty to seek voluntary unitization?
How is this different from the duty to seek voluntary unitization?
Does it entail obtaining cooperation from lessors?
It would be necessary. Well, leases vary in a lot of different ways. Some leases actually have provisions in them in which you can go about unitizing the lease. Some provide for that. If the lease doesn't provide for unitization, it would be necessary to write a unit agreement which would cover all the landowners in the field.
Which could, if you wrote a unit agreement, could in effect amend, and often does by its own terms, amend you, express lease terms.
You could conceivably amend the express leases, and there is a duty sometimes to seek voluntary unitization. The court distinguished in the Amoco v. Alexander case between pooling, which they said protects against local drainage, and unitization. They're really different concepts. Pooling almost invariably takes the form of a lease provision which allows the producer to go and put his unit together with neighboring lands to form essentially a drilling unit to protect against local drainage. Unitization is a much more complex process, involves dozens, hundreds, sometimes thousands of leases. It takes a long time to negotiate, and they're just not the same thing.
Well, voluntary unitization requires the cooperation of a lessor.
Voluntary unitization
requires some cooperation from the lessor.
Voluntary unitization requires the cooperation of the lessor at the inception of the lease. At the beginning of the lease, the lessor has got to sign a lease that contains a pooling clause, and at the end of that period, the pooling clause is automatic. What the Court of Appeals wants to do is shift that process from the beginning of the lease, when the bargain is made, to force us to retrade the deal, make a new bargain at the point at which we've achieved production.
All the Court of Appeals did was suggest that the lessee must attempt to obtain the cooperation of the lessor. Isn't that all the opinion says?
The Court of Appeals said, well, the Court of Appeals, in effect, found that we had obtained the cooperation of the lessor because the Court of Appeals held that these units, this blue unit was the unit that we formed that the jury said was valid. And by the way, this is exhibit C and D for the court's brief. The Court of Appeals treated these purple units as though they were valid. So the Court of Appeals held that we, in effect, had cooperated and had amended our lease, which we didn't do. And as a result of that, the court said these two units, treated these two units as valid units.
But Mr. Pennell, what I'm trying to understand is how is the cooperation that the Court of Appeals talked about in this case inconsistent with the various duties recognized in the Amoco case by this court that required cooperation? Where is the inconsistency between Amoco and what the Court of Appeals said in this case?
Well, in the first place, the Amoco case was a case that involved field-wide unitization rather than pooling. The court made that distinction. In second place, we already have a contract here, and the question is, do we have to amend our contract? Is our contract, do we have to recognize these two units, or can we simply ignore them? In the Amoco case, the court said you may have a duty to seek that. You don't necessarily have to agree on voluntary unitization.
Well, isn't that what the Court of Appeals said here, was that all you have to do is attempt to seek it?
Well,
the cooperation?
They said that that's a duty under the Amoco case, and then the Court of Appeals proceeded to recognize these purple units. And our argument is that that's backwards. If this blue unit is valid, these purple units don't prove anything at all if we haven't agreed to them. And if we have a duty to attempt to cooperate with the landowners, that's an entirely different thing from saying that we have these two purple units up here, which as hypothetical unit, which then essentially, the map really in a way says it all, because the map shows that we have two purple units stacked on top of our existing valid blue units, and that's completely inconsistent.
Assuming that Amoco duties did apply, how did you fulfill them?
How did we fulfill the Amoco duties? We sought and obtained voluntary unitization in this case by going to the landowner, Mrs. Leverage, who had a no-pooling clause in her lease. It's a lease that's recorded. Everybody knew about the no-pooling clause. There are actually two leases. Both of them are recorded. And we said to her, we would like to, starting in 1991 or 92, whatever it shows, we would like to pool your lease with these northern leases. And she refused for about 2 years, and ultimately we prevailed on her to change her lease so that we could essentially amend and include these northern leases in here. And by doing that, we protected against local drainage.
Prior to the time that the unit was created, what did you do to protect your northern lessees from drainage?
Before the unit was created, we conducted seismic operations. Here's the seismic line through here. The evidence shows that within 500 feet of this line, all the wells have been drilled were dry. 500 feet of this size of line. This is the plainest version of the size of
But wasn't there evidence that there was drainage prior to the unitization?
I'm sorry, was there?
Wasn't there evidence that there was drainage prior to the unitization?
There's evidence that before the unitization took place, according to the plaintiff's experts, the plaintiff's leases were drained. There is no evidence that this blue unit was drained. They never addressed that question. That was simply not part of the plaintiff's case.
Didn't you violate your obligation to the northern lessors by not drilling the well to protect them from drainage?
Well, I don't believe we did. What the lease says is, and it's a pretty standard pooling clause, the pooling clause says that a producer may pool at any time and from time to time, whether before or after production is obtained from a unit. And whether the well is on the unit or off the unit, on the leases or off the leases, which in this case, the number five well is off the leases. So under our contract, under the agreement we have made with the landowners, we could do exactly what we did, which was we essentially investigated their land to see if it was possible that we could draw on the land. And then when we ascertained we weren't able to really make a decision, the leases were expiring. We pooled at any time, which was at the end of the lease period. When we completed that pooling, we had pooled with a well off the lease, and we exactly fulfilled the terms of our lease.
But how did that protect them from pre-unitization drainage? How did that make up for it?
Well, Mr. Woods testified that he protected them against if there was any drainage. He said only about 15 to 20 acres of this land at most was productive, and he had protected them against any. He compensated them for any past drainage by giving them half, almost half, of this unit. There are a couple of leases up here that weren't owned by the plant, so he'd given them almost half of this unit, and he said that compensated them for any drainage that would have taken place.
You said he said that.
93.
Was there any other evidence to the contrary that the other lessors were not compensated and were not protected from drainage prior to the pooling?
The plaintiff's evidence was that this, plaintiff's case was entirely one of saying that this blue unit was void. It was invalid because it was formed in bad faith. And as a result, all you could look to were these leases and the three wells that were draining vertically from these leases. And they said if you ignore this blue unit and look at these three wells, there's evidence that drainage occurred.
So based upon what you're saying now, are you saying that question number three to the jury concerning drainage concerned only post-pooling drainage?
No, I think question number three concerned all drainage from the lease at all time. But what I'm attempting to suggest to the court is that when the jury found that this blue unit was valid, well number five can no longer be a draining well as a matter of law. So had there been any drainage before the pooling took place, well number five could not have drained it. And the only opinion in the record was that well number five, four, and six drained these leases. In fact, what the case the plaintiff should have proved was that wells number four and six carried out horizontal drainage on well number five.
That's on the record.
Issue 4B, and it divides drainage, damages for drainage between past and future. What was the evidence offered by the plaintiff to support the findings under past drainage damage?
The evidence offered by the plaintiff was that this unit was invalid, and therefore these three wells had drained, beginning in 1991, had drained all these plaintiff's leases.
Wasn't there evidence from the plaintiff's experts that before this unit was set up, that 4, 5, and 6 were draining the northern leases?
That was their evidence. They said if you look at it beginning in 1991 to 1993,
and this unit was created in December of 1993.
Yes.
And there was testimony that between 1991 and 1993, when this unit was formed, that wells 4, 5, and 6 were in fact draining the northern leases.
That's correct.
So there was evidence of pre-pooling draining then in this record.
There's some evidence of pre-pooling drainage in the record. There's also we also have jury finding number one, which was in the plaintiff's favor, in the defense's favor, which said that we had pooled this lease validly. And in support of that, Mr. Wood testified, I took care of pre-pooling drainage because I gave him
the jury didn't agree with Mr. Wood.
Well, my response to that is the jury answered the wrong question. Question number three did not direct itself, is there horizontal drainage over here? Question number three said, was there drainage not from 91 to 93, was there drainage from 91 till the end of time these three wells from these leases?
But that
didn't occur.
The question on substantial drainage did not have a time period limit on it. It just asked whether or not there was substantial drainage.
That's
correct?
Right.
And so there's nothing wrong with that particular jury question. The place where it could have been limited to a time period was in the damage question.
No, ma'am, I don't agree with that, because what question number three said was, was there drainage from the subject leases?
I understand.
And the subject leases weren't a proper source of inquiry, certainly beginning in 93 at all.
So your challenge is really to the damage question. There's really nothing wrong with the liability finding on substantial drainage, because there is evidence of drainage of the northern leases before
No, I don't agree with that either. My challenge is...
Now, wait a minute. Yes. You've confused me.
I'm sorry.
You keep referring to this leverage 5 as a pooled unit, but
yes.
It wasn't pooled until 93.
That's correct.
Okay. Now, you are now in 1991. You're
right.
Not in 1993.
Okay.
Do you agree that pooled lease does not exist?
It doesn't exist in 1993.
1991. Now, do you agree or not agree that we are now in 1991, there is no such thing as a pooled lease, did the plaintiff have some evidence that drainage was occurring?
The plaintiff's experts actually said that, didn't say anything about compensating for drainage even in 1991. They said they would have drilled a well in January of 1992.
Okay.
They would have drilled these two wells in 1992. There is some evidence that there's drainage occurring, but the question which Justice Hankinson asked, I have to respond no to, because beginning in 1992, from 1991 until 1993, the question was, and for all time. Was there drainage from the subject leases? There may have been some drainage from the subject leases in the first 2 years. There's no evidence, there's no liability question that goes to the first 2 years, and the damages evidence that's submitted on the first 2 years does not segregate itself by the period 91 to 93. It goes from 91 to 95. So the plaintiffs weren't thinking at all about drainage. The plaintiff's case was, this blue unit is no good. This blue unit
Your point is not that there's no evidence of drainage in 1991 to before the pooling. Your statement is, because they submitted the wrong questions, they can't now get the court to say, because they submitted the wrong questions, you conclude that there is no evidence of damages of drainage in this case, because they asked the wrong question to the jury.
The way the case should have been submitted is, from 1991 to 93, was there evidence of drainage from the subject leases? If the leverage number 5 unit is valid, from 93 forward, is there evidence of drainage horizontally from the leverage unit by these two wells? That question wasn't asked. That question wasn't pled. There was no evidence to support that question. There's no opinion in 438 pages of testimony.
Did you object to question 4B?
We objected to question 4B at the... We objected that there was no evidence after the case was over. I cannot remember precisely the objections to question 4B. I think at one point we objected that question 4B that damages should not be addressed until we had solved the question of unit drainage.
Did you object to question 4B on the basis that it didn't segregate between the time period pre-pooling and post-pooling?
I don't believe we did, but I don't think we needed to, because there's no finding of liability for the period pre-pooling and post-pooling.
Did you object to the instruction that was part of question 4B as being an improper definition of the way the damages
I would have to look at the record. I just don't recall.
Are any of those discussions you're just now having preserved or raised in this court?
Are any of those discussions raised in this court?
Or improperly submitted?
Yeah, Your Honor, our point simply is that there are two independent grounds of recovery in this case. One of them is drainage from leases, and the other is drainage from vertical, horizontal. If this question was horizontal drainage wasn't submitted, it wasn't pled, there was no evidence, it just never appeared in the case. As a result, under Rule 278, 279, the civil rules, when it was the plaintiff's burden to prove that and to submit the question, when they didn't, they waived this question. We didn't waive it. The question never was in the case. We couldn't have submitted a question about unit drainage because there was no evidence of unit drainage.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
The court is ready to hear argument from respondent.
May it please the court, Mr. William Boyce will present argument for the respondent.
I want to try to get two points clarified at the outset. First, with respect to duty, we are squarely within the contours that this court has already mapped out in Amoco and Shell Oil versus Stanford.
I'm having a hard time seeing this as a duty case as opposed to a damage model case.
And I don't disagree with you. I think we're rock solid on the duty. I think the general duty is well established. So the question is, okay,
well, that's not what I said. I'm having a hard time reaching that issue because
okay.
It seems to me to be a damage model case.
Okay.
So help me if you will. I'm having a hard time reaching
and
that issue. And let me tell you why I'm having a hard time reaching it. It seems to me that your hypothetical units were based upon the presumption that the pooling was done in bad faith. Is that right?
I don't agree with you on that, and I can explain why at this point if you like. May I do that?
Well, before you do that, I'm trying to determine the effect of the finding of no bad faith pooling. If there was no bad faith pooling, then don't you have to take pooling into account in calculating damages?
You do, and it was.
Okay,
and
let me explain that.
I think that the key to sorting out the confusion that Southeastern has tried to create with respect to pooling and bad faith lies in this fact. If Southeastern had drilled the well that our experts say it should have drilled in January of 1992, then the 1993 leverage unit number 5 never comes into existence.
Well, that goes back to my question. You're trying to ignore the fact that it ever came into existence.
No, we're not. And the way we're not is that the way the damage model is set up and the way question number 4B is structured, it says what would be the royalties that the Hotchkiss would have recovered if you assume that the January 1992 drainage protection well had been drilled when it should have been, and you take those out into the future. And then question 4B deals with the historical fact that that 92 well wasn't drilled, the 93 unit was formed, so we got to account for that. We got to do something about that. And the way question 4B addresses that is it deducts the lesser amount of royalties that the Hotchkiss received by virtue of the 1993 unit from the greater amount of royalties that they would have received if the January 1992 drainage protection well had been drilled. And so what it accomplishes is it treats the 1993 unit for what it is. It's a mitigation issue. It is not a pooling versus drainage issue. It's a mitigation issue.
But isn't pooling one of the methods that an operator can employ to meet its duty to avoid drainage?
Under certain circumstances and under facts other than those present in this case, that may well be. But understand the circumstances where this arises. From 1992, when that well, the drainage protection well, should have been drilled, until the end of 93, Southeastern could not pool with the leverage land because Aunt Zayla would not allow them because she would not amend her leases. So the chronology that was the focus of some of the questioning at the beginning of this panel's discussion comes to the front here. Between the 1992 to the end of 93 period, you've got no pooling because Aunt Zayla won't allow them to do it. You've got nothing going on our leases, and you've got drainage, according to our expert testimony, which the jury believed, going on starting 40 days after the number 4 well was drilled in 1991 and thereafter.
Let's assume that we don't agree with you about the duty.
Okay.
We don't agree that you have an obligation to amend your lease. It seems to me that your hypothetical wells might have protected the Divin lease and the Cubina leases from drainage. What about the other plaintiffs?
No, I believe that the way that the wells were structured and the units that Mr. Garza had set up were to encompass.
But those units would have required the lessee to modify its leases. Let's assume we said there's no duty to do that.
Okay.
There's an obligation to protect against drainage, but not to amend your leases.
Okay, and I'll accept that hypothetical for purposes of the question, but I don't want the court to misunderstand. I do not agree with that and would like to come back to that in a moment. But your question is then, if there isn't a hypothetical unit around the drainage protection well, then does that protect the people who are outside, who otherwise would be included in the unit? Is that your question?
My question is, what evidence is in the record that the lessee could have done to protect all of these individual lessors from drainage, assuming they were not obligated to pool or try to unitize or amend those leases so they could create your hypothetical unit?
There was other evidence to the effect that Southeastern's options during this two-year block of time when nothing's going on our leases is to drill the well.
But that was protection. Okay. One lease. What about the other?
Okay.
What were
or
the options?
Another option that the experts Hilty and Garza testified to is that Southeastern could drop the leases, could allow them to expire, and that way that the Hotchkiss, the Divins, the Cabinas can go out and get La Perita or anybody else who they can get interested in it to come out and drill. And that's really the crux of what went on here, because Southeastern didn't want to drill, but it didn't want to drop. It didn't want to let us out of or allow the leases to expire, and that was the problem that came up at the end of 1993 in the terrible box that Southeastern put itself into, because it couldn't pool. Aunt Zella wouldn't allow them to pool her land. It didn't want to drop, and it didn't want to drill us a well. And so the land just sat there with no development going on for it. But I want to come back, because I don't want you to misunderstand that I accept the assumption that somehow a new duty was created, because I would strongly urge the court that the Court of Appeals opinion is squarely within the four corners, not only of Amoco, but also of Shell Oil versus Stansberry.
Why do you need that, Denny? Let's assume they had the right to unitize up until the day the lease expired, which they did. Wouldn't you still have a cause of action for pre-unitization drainage?
Yes.
And so why do you need a new duty?
We don't need a new duty.
Why do you need this other duty?
There's no other duty. The duty here is the same one that was established and discussed in Stansberry and in Amoco. But I think the answer to your question is, yes, there was drainage before the 1993 leverage unit was formed, and we had the cause of action for that, which we sued on, which we submitted to the jury for the drainage of those individual leases. But I do want to get the point across in case there is some uneasiness.
Let me ask you to clarify for me. If you're saying there's no new duty, even though that's what the CA said, it must be that you're arguing that the only duty here is to avoid drainage. And they have an option. They either drill a well or drop the lease or they pool. You attempted to get bad faith pooling because you really wanted to drop the lease and you lost on the bad faith pooling.
Correct.
But if this is a drainage issue,
correct,
then your claim is they didn't pool soon enough. And so there is some drainage that occurred on this property by the failure to drill that other well the 2 years before.
That is correct. If you're going to look at it in terms of the...
But what you want us to do in that light is to treat the later pooling as simply a mitigation.
Correct.
As opposed to a satisfaction of the duty. Well, the issues in this case, really, do we say if you pool too late in honoring your obligation to drainage, then it becomes merely mitigation of the damages that you suffered by failing to pool earlier, or we measure it against the royalties that you have earned if you drilled on the lease as opposed to the royalties you now earn because of pooling. Isn't that really the box you're putting us into? If you say this is no new duty, this is simply the duty to avoid drainage.
Correct.
Aren't you putting us in the box of treating ultimately the option of pooling as being simply a mitigation of the damages because drainage really requires you to build a well?
I think that the answer to your question is that if there is any box established in this case, it's established by the facts and the circumstances that Southeastern put itself into with respect to being a common lessee, and more importantly, a common lessee that couldn't pool with Aunt Zella's land until the end of 1993. Under those kinds of circumstances where it did not have the option to pool with Aunt Zella, which it now tries to rely on as some kind of a retroactive cure-all for 2 years of uncompensated drainage, when Southeastern puts itself in that box and it's got the common lessee problem and a no pooling clause on the bottom of the south side of the fence, then it's got to do something. And our expert testimony was that what it should have done is drill the drainage protection well in January of 92.
Mr. Boyce, your argument is not only that the pooling was too late, it was that even when it was done, it was not enough.
That is correct.
Even if it was good faith pooling, it still didn't satisfy the duty to protect the leasehold from drainage.
And that comes back to the point I started out with, which is that it's correct, because if you drill the well in January of 1992, you never get to the 1993 leverage pooling.
That's where I have the disconnect, because the jury, you lost on that. The jury said that's a valid unit.
That's correct.
And so you don't get any drainage after 93 in the jury's findings, because the unit is valid. Why aren't we just looking at 91 or pre-93 damages?
No, it doesn't go, because of this point. The validity of the unit, the 1993 unit, under the jury's finding, is respected in the jury charge and in the judgment because it is used as mitigation. The 1993 unit is there. We can't ignore it. We didn't want it, but we can't ignore it. It was done. But again, the way to think about the damages model is to say, if Southeastern had done what it should have done in January 1992, we would have had royalties from the drainage protection well, which under the numbers as run by our experts are X, all right? You've got royalties that indisputably we're going to get from the 1993 leverage unit, which are less than X.
Let's assume they had drilled the 92 well.
Okay.
And then they had created the unit in 93.
But
let me finish out my hypothetical. Then they decide that that's an unequal, that's not the best way to develop a property. That's an unequal situation. So they shut in the 92 well.
Okay.
And just pump from the number 5 well in this unit. Now, how can you complain about that if that unit is valid?
Where I part company with you is the notion that after the 92 well had been drilled, that they would have formed the 93 unit, because the only reason under the facts of this case that the 93 unit was formed was to hold on to our lease.
But you're trying to ignore
and prevent
that.
Them
you're,
expiring.
You're trying to, in your damage model, just ignore the creation of the unit, and you lost on it.
No, ma'am. We're not ignoring the creation of the unit, because we are allowing the royalties that we receive from the unit into the future to be deducted from the damages.
But if the unit's valid, why are you entitled to any more royalties than you would be entitled to from the unit?
If the unit is invalid, the way it would have shaken out under the way that the charge is set up, and I want to come back to the question about whether or not there was a charge objection to the way this was established, because I submit to the court there wasn't, but let's put that aside for just a moment. If the 93 unit had been invalid.
No, I'm saying if it's valid, why are you entitled to any more royalties than you've gotten from the 93?
Because, and I guess I'm not phrasing it in the right way, but because if the 92 well had been drilled, there never would have been a 93 unit. And in order to both give effect to the finding that a well should have been drilled in 92, and to simultaneously give effect to the fact that even though we didn't want it, the unit was formed in 93, the way to do that is to treat it as a mitigation issue in the way that the damages are structured.
Do you agree that there was no evidence of drainage from the unit after it was formed?
I disagree with that, because we had evidence of drainage from our individual leases, which individual leases were within the WC leverage number 5 unit. There was not a model that was specifically established to show drainage from the unit as a whole, but there is some evidence of drainage from the unit, because there is some evidence of drainage from our individual leases,
well,
which were in the unit.
All right, I thought that once you pooled, it was all part of one unit, and therefore there could not, you don't look at the individual leases anymore, you look at the unit.
As between the drainage within this unit, under facts other than what we have here, that may be a valid point. But my point is, again, if you had drilled us the well that you were supposed to.
If the unit was validly formed, which
correct.
Is what the jury found.
Correct.
Then isn't it just a matter of black letter law that there can be no drainage from the individual leases?
Again, I think what you need to do is look at the way that the questions are structured to account for the chronology. And I keep coming back to this point because I think it's the key point here. We have a situation where a well should have been drilled, and it wasn't drilled, and we've got this unit. We've got to do something about the royalties that come from the unit.
You're putting us in a position of saying that the only option is a well must have been drilled, but that's not true. To meet the duty to avoid drainage, the option of pooling was available.
It was not available to Southeastern until the end of
93. Only because one of the leases they wanted to pool wasn't giving their permission. But that was their option. If they'd gotten the permission in 91 and had pooled, this case would be over with, right?
Well, of course, the disconnect here is that Southeastern is simultaneously relying on the fact that they got a lease amendment from Aunt Zayla as a defense to our claims against them, and there's
but going back to the beginning,
we didn't have, they could, that it's improper to get a lease amendment.
Sure. So going back to the beginning, the duty to avoid drainage is not necessarily to drill a well.
That there are other options in addition to drilling.
Your argument is that because they couldn't, because they delayed meeting their duty to avoid drainage, you had damages for drainage.
Correct.
Okay. Now, the measure of damages isn't necessarily the drilling of a well. You argue that because of the unique facts of this case, because pooling wasn't an option, then your damages are the failure to drill a well.
Correct. I mean, because pooling falls aside by virtue of Aunt Zella's unwillingness to amend her lease, that cuts down Southeastern's options to two under the expert testimony before the jury.
So you're suffering.
Drop us or drill us.
Now, but your damages are only for the period of time you're suffering drainage. and your drainage is for the period of time until they respond to stopping the drainage. Your damages are either until they drill a well or until they pool.
And I'm going to come back to the point I tried to make before, which is the way that question number 4B deals with that circumstance is to treat it as an issue of mitigation, and this allows me to address the question regarding preservation. I would direct to the, even if you assume that Southeastern's attempts to establish this tension between pooling and drainage have some validity, and I certainly don't buy into that assumption, but even if you do, then what their real complaint is, I think Mr. Panel said it, that the jury charge asks the wrong questions. There is no preservation in this record with respect specifically to question number 4B and the way that it structures this issue as a mitigation issue, and I would direct the court's attention to pages 2317 and 2318 of the statement of facts dealing with charge objections to 4B. And I also want to draw the point here that I've attached it as a tab to the brief, and I hope that it jumps out to the court as much as it jumps out to me. At the same time, the Southeastern is saying we asked the wrong question and that we should have asked about drainage from the unit, not drainage from the individual leases. Southeastern tendered to the trial court, got endorsed, refused, and dated a question asking about drainage from the individual leases. And I say to the court, not very lightly, because I spend a fair amount of my life worrying about jury charges and waiver of charge error. If there is any charge error in this case, I don't think there is, but if there is, it surely was not preserved on this record, where Southeastern tenders a question in the exact form that it now says was erroneous.
What was their no evidence objection after the jury's verdict?
They objected to no evidence from drainage from the unit. I think you're talking about the post-trial motion to disregard. And I would submit to the court that an after-the-fact no evidence objection in a post-trial motion is not enough to preserve error. This discussion was recently undertaken by the court with respect to expert testimony. You can't come in after the fact and say, I've got a magic no evidence challenge now that cures my failure to raise objections during trial. So it is in this case.
What if the issue is right, that they just don't agree with your damage model? And did they bring that up to the trial court saying there's no evidence of the kind of damages that you're seeking? In other words, did they preserve the error that if we disagree with you and say your only damage is for the infestation, did they preserve that?
No, they did not, Your Honor.
Well, I have a plaintiff's proposed jury charge, and it poses a question saying the proper issue would be, do you find that any of the landowners' leases suffered substantial drainage between their effective date and December 1593 when the unit was formed? Would that not preserve their error?
I would submit to the court that it would not. Let me flip to the charge error. Are you looking at page 1800? Is that on there?
Well, 1363.
I think that may be a proposed jury charge prior to the charge conference. I'm looking specifically at page 1800, which was the tendered and refused question. I would submit to the court that discussion drafts of jury charges prior to trial do not preserve error. And more specifically, the one that was tendered is the one that's attached behind tab G of our brief, and it pretty clearly sets out that Southeastern bought into the way that this charge was structured, and it cannot now come before this court to say that the trial court erred in setting it up that way.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Well, you have to take the answer to the questions that Justice Owen and Justice Enoch both asked about what you do if you have a problem of drainage, a potential problem of drainage. Counsel said that you can drill a well or you can drop the leases, and what we should have done was we should have dropped the leases if we didn't think we should drill a well at this point. That's not what the experts said. Their own experts, Garza and Hilty, said you have three choices. They said there's several points in the record. I can't give the exact references, but I'll be happy to file a brief. They said you drill, you drop, or you pool. And that's exactly what Stanley Woods did. He went out and pooled his lease with a leverage lease. It took him over a year to do it. Probably took him close to 2 years to get the permission of Mrs. Leverage. How long do you think it would take to get a voluntary unitization agreement? He did go get a voluntary unitization agreement. He got this landowner to agree to pool her acreage with the acreage to the north. Another question, or a suggestion was made, that question 4B provides for some sort of mitigation of damages. Question 4B didn't mitigate any damages. Let me show you why we have this page here. If you take these purple units, the reason these purple units are in here is because this grosses up the damages. You have to exclude all this, and you have to put these purple units in, because this way, all these landowners are represented. Justice Owen asked the question, what happens if you just drill this well without a unit? You leave out the Hodgett, Covina, Radius, and Brandon out of here. If you drill this one, you leave out, you keep in some of Covina's acres, but you leave out the other landowners. So you have to form the units, and they form the units. These units give them 100% of their royalty. This is why they have these units in the case. If you go to the blue unit, they don't get 100% of the royalty, they get their fair share of the royalty, which is less than half. They have less than half the acreage. These aren't plaintiffs. So instead of, for example, if you have a 1/8 royalty up here, you get a full 1/8 out of each unit. But if you take the damages out of this, you get less than a 1/16 royalty. That's not mitigation. Yes, ma'am.
Just a question under the law. If drainage is occurring and a lessee pools in an effort to fulfill its duty to protect the leasehold, does that always, as a matter of law, fulfill the duty, pooling?
If there's a pooling clause which says you can pool at any time and from time to time before or after production is established on this acreage or on acreage that you pooled it with, I think that fulfills the duty.
So
the contract is the law between the parties, and that's the agreement that we
made. I understand, but as a matter of law then, for example, as I understand, part of the complaint in this case is that the pooling occurred with the number 5 well.
Yes.
And they're also complaining about the number 4 and number 6 who were out there, which they say still would be draining off their leases. So they have, and I know they lost that jury issue, so I'm just asking you the general legal question. Then if pooling is allowed under the terms of the various documents, then pooling as a matter of law satisfies the duty to protect the leasehold.
I believe that's correct.
There can be no complaint on the part of the lessee that the pooling didn't get there because drainage is still occurring and I'm not getting all the credit I need to be getting.
You can't complain about these leases anymore once the pooling is taken place.
But you could complain about the unit.
You can say, well, wait a minute, even though this well is no longer draining me, but these two wells are draining me, and then you have a different case, and you present that case, and they didn't present that case. That's not the case that we've got in front of us.
What was your no evidence objection specifically, or objection?
We objected that there was no evidence to,
providing 4B.
Well, may I say, first of all, about question 4B, question 4B is not a liability question. If question 3 isn't any good, it doesn't make any difference what they find.
Assuming we think question B is okay, what objections do you make to 4B? Or ask either pre or post-judgment?
We objected post-judgment, but I can't tell you exactly the sequence of objections during the charge conference. There were objections that we shouldn't even have 4B in the record until we decided that the trial should have been bifurcated. But after the judgment, we filed a series of objections. And I can't name them precisely, but the objection said there was no evidence for 4B. There's no evidence to support 3. Question 3. Neither one of those should have been submitted to the jury because there's no evidence. There was a question about how can you approach this unit once the, well, the question which is put is, if in 1991, this is the hypothetical that we go back to, do you simply ignore this unit that's formed later, and does the formation of these units make this unit superfluous? I think, as in all parts of this case, we have the question backwards. The question is, if I do what I'm validly entitled to do, and if I have a good faith pooling right under this lease, then don't these two units become superfluous because the blue units have been held to be valid? And can you superimpose invalid units that I never agreed to a unit that I formed?
That's my question. Agreeing with your premise that the pooling could be done at any time under the terms of the lease. Because you pooled in 93, does that just wipe out any drainage that occurred before that day between 90 and 93?
Your 91 and 93, Your Honor. I think that...
In other words, what happens to what's already happened even though you pool? Does it disappear? Is that your viewpoint?
Well,
because
I think,
you pool, you're free?
I think the question is, the evidence in this record shows that Mr. Woods believed he was compensating for drainage. But I think the question is, and the real case that was involved here was a good faith pooling case. And I think what you do is, to make the case that these plaintiffs tried to make, you first have to dissolve this unit. And if this unit is formed in good faith, then I think you've lived up to your contractual obligation to the royalty owner. Pooling between 1991 and 1993, if they could show that it wasn't compensated, if they had another bite at the apple, they went back and said, well, we had 2 years of pooling in here, and what you did didn't really compensate for it, then possibly they could
recover
damage.
Was there any evidence that the unit as formed did not compensate them for 91 and 92 drainage?
I'm sorry, I didn't understand.
Was there any evidence that the unit that as it was formed, the blue unit, did not compensate them for 91 and 92 drainage?
No, because there was no discussion by the plaintiff's experts of the effect of the unit. The plaintiff's experts said the unit, number one, and this was in the opening statement as well as all the expert testimony, number one, the unit is invalid. They said that again and again and again. It's formed in bad faith. The jury didn't buy that. Number two, they said since it's formed in bad faith, these three wells drained all these leases. They got it backwards. The unit's formed in good faith, so these two wells didn't drain this unit. And that's
well,
the
I'm going to get back to my original problem with seeing this as a Diddy case. Do you understand why I'm having trouble seeing it as a Diddy case? I mean, we don't even reach the Diddy question. If they have improperly ignored the pooled unit, then why do we address Diddy? Don't we just address the damages based on the pooled unit that they didn't properly submit the damage question? The only way the Diddy issue comes into play is if you accept the hypothetical unit.
What I'm attempting to argue, and possibly I'm just not making myself clear, is that the whole case is tried backwards.
No, I understand that. That's what I'm saying. If we say they ignored the pooled unit,
yes,
we don't address their hypothetical unit.
That's right.
And if we don't address the hypothetical unit, Diddy never comes into question.
And there's no damages.
Well, okay, but it...
Because all they did to prove, to attempt to prove damages was say, you have to form the purple unit. Well, if the blue unit wipes out the purple unit,
but, I mean,
then there's no damages.
That's what I'm saying. It seems like a damages question and not a Diddy question. The only way it becomes a Diddy question is if you accept their hypothetical well scenario.
I agree with that, but at the same time, the time it becomes a duty question is that, in essence, the Court of Appeals, in order to sidestep the problem of unit drainage and the problem of these hypothetical units not existing, the Court of Appeals said, well, of course they exist because they were under duty to go out and amend their valid lease with these royalty owners to bring them into existence. And I say there's no duty on our part ever recognized in Texas, even in the Amoco case, or any other case, to go out and amend an existing contract. You may have a duty to pursue voluntary unitization, as you pointed out early on. And our client did that, and he got voluntary unitization, and the jury blessed it. So perhaps it's not a duty case. I'm essentially trying to answer the place at which the Court of Appeals tried to save the case for the plaintiffs. But it seems to me that you're also correct, and that the essence of the case is, if this unit is valid, these two units can't be valid. If these two units can't be valid, there is no liability and there are no damages and the case should be rendered. It wasn't really a drainage case. It's a pooling case.
I'd like both parties to make briefs on what evidence there was of drainage, damages for drainage prior to the unitization.
Okay.
What evidence was there in the record of drainage prior to the unitization of damages?
Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
That concludes the argument. The first call, we'll take 3 for 6.
All right.